Hi, Steve Pomerantz here, host of On the Money with today's On the Money Extra, where we feature market updates and insights as well as guest interviews with noted financial experts to help you stay informed and learn the facts to make the right decisions about money. So let's get started. Dr. Kenneth Kim is a finance director and has been a senior financial economist at the SEC and a consultant for the CFA Institute, which is the Certified Financial Analyst Institute, a very well-known and reputable organization. Dr. Kim is also author of two college textbooks and numerous papers, and today we're here to talk about his latest book, Mutual Funds Exposed: What You Don't Know May Be Hazardous to Your Wealth. Hi, Ken. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
You know, there's an awful lot of mutual fund bashing taking place these days in the media, and often for good reason. But mutual funds have been around for over 80 years, and for a long time, it's been the only way a small investor could participate in the complicated stock market. I mean, remember John Templeton and Peter Lynch? What has changed over the years to make them less attractive?
That's a good question. You know, at one time, mutual funds were the best way to invest, but that was in the 20th century. And now in the 21st century, you know, our lives have been improved and enhanced because of technology. And one of those ways that our lives can be improved can also be with regard to investing. With technology that's available today, there are better ways to invest than in the outdated, flawed mutual funds of the past.
So there are some built-in disadvantages to mutual funds. It's really not the manager's fault so much, but it's just the structure itself is kind of designed to underperform benchmarks and underperform other kinds of investments, right?
That's correct. You know, at the end of the day, the primary problem with mutual funds is that investors, when they buy mutual funds, they think that they're buying the underlying securities that are in that mutual fund.
Sure.
But
yeah,
what they're really buying is just the claim or share of the mutual fund. And so what ends up happening is we end up being what we call commingled investors. And as commingled investors, what that means is that if you and I buy a mutual fund, we might, you know, invest and rest. But the mutual fund, because, you know, they're going to be accommodating other investors that are going to be buying and selling the mutual fund, when they do these things, everything that the mutual fund does is going to affect all of their shareholders, including you and me, even if we're not doing anything. And that's the main part of the problem behind mutual funds, is that when they're accommodating other investors, there's going to be costs associated with that, and you and I have to share the burden of that cost.
So, Ken, when you commingle your assets with others in this fashion, then you are basically adopting other people's problems in a sense, or in this case, maybe other people's tax basis. So sometimes you have to pay taxes based upon what other people earn, but you didn't in fact earn. That's always been a disadvantage. Talk to us about that.
Right. And so this is something where a lot of people who have had mutual funds in the past, you know, they might have seen the value of their funds decline. And then at the end of the year, they receive a 1099 capital gains tax.
Mm-hmm.
And so people wonder what's going on there. And the problem is very easy to understand. You know, I might buy a mutual fund today. There might be a stock in there that's worth $100. Let's say next week that stock goes to 80. And so obviously I've lost value in my investment. But now let's say the mutual fund decides to sell that stock at 80. Now you're thinking, and I'm thinking, that there's going to be a tax loss here. But the truth might be the mutual fund might have bought this stock maybe a year ago at 40. And so here, this fund has bought a stock for 40, sells it at 80, has a 100% capital gain, has to pay tax on it. But you and I have lost money on this stock because we went in on this fund when the stock was at 100.
Yeah.
So while we have lost money, the mutual fund has gained money, has to pay capital gains tax. And then who pays this capital gains tax? Believe it or not, it's everybody who owns this mutual fund, including you and me. And so not only have we lost money, but we're also paying capital gains for gains that we did not experience.
It's an awful structure. And really, the biggest sin is if they pay those distributions, let's say in December 15th, and unknowingly you bought the fund on December 14th, holy cow, you got a loss as soon as you started and you haven't even done anything.
That's correct. That would be the worst case scenario. That's right.
So mutual funds are also designed, or the way they're designed works against them even beating a standard benchmark like the S&P 500. Mutual fund managers do have their favorite stocks, but they have to fill their portfolio with all kinds of other stuff as well. Tell us about that.
Right. That's another problem with these mutual funds is that they're gigantic. I mean, the mutual fund industry is larger than a $1 trillion industry. And so if we want to invest in things like a Fidelity or a Vanguard or a PIMCO, you know, and so we give them money. And these mutual fund managers, they're thinking, okay, what stocks can we buy with this money? We're so large, we've already got, you know, money in, let's say, Apple and Google. And so we can't buy more of those. And so with this extra money, what are we going to buy? And so they're going to start trying to figure out, you know, investments, where to park this money. And is this how you want, you know, you and I want our dollars to be invested, where they're trying to search for something to invest in? But they have no choice, these mutual funds, because they just have so much money to invest. And so, you know, they're not just investing in their favorite stocks, but they have to invest in many additional stocks as well. And this causes a dilution.
I also think that a lot of the stocks that they invest in try to replicate the benchmark as well. Maybe some large percentage of that excess money goes into just trying to buy the S&P 500 or their stocks, because they don't really want to perform too much out of line with the benchmarks, right? Because the money managers are going to get paid based upon how they do, or at least they will attract funds how they do relative to a benchmark. So if their returns are that much different, it may hurt them. So there's money manager employment issues here too. They're worried about their house in Greenwich, Connecticut, right?
That is correct. You know, a lot of mutual fund managers, the way they're behaving is just like what you say. They're behaving rationally. I mean, they don't want to stick their necks out, because at the end of the day, they just want to just survive. And so you're right. I mean, they would be very happy to just be able to move along with a benchmark. They're not rewarded for outperformance.
Yeah.
And so, you know, just being able to move along a benchmark would be something that would satisfy them.
So you mentioned in your book this idea of over-diversification, which sounds kind of impossible in a way. How can someone be over-diversified? Tell us how you can be.
So, you know, with portfolio mathematics, you don't need to have 100 or 200 securities to get rid of all of that risk that can be diversified away. You only need about 30. But the reason why the mutual fund industry invests in hundreds of stocks is because they're trying to drive down the risk as little as possible. But this risk reduction, when they do that, they're sacrificing the return.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's what's happening here. And this leads to that dilution that I was talking about before. And the other thing is this, again, just going back to this point about mutual funds being large, they've got so much money, they just don't know where to put it. And so what ends up happening is they just end up buying stocks that might be maybe their 100th favorite stock or their 200th favorite stock. Do we really want mutual fund managers to be investing our money in what they believe to be, you know, only the 100th best investment? I don't think so. I think we would want a professional money manager to really identify the 30 or the 40 or the 50 best stocks and just put our money in those securities.
Well, dealing with these problems has led to the creation of the exchange-traded fund. I mean, one benefit of an exchange-traded fund is the tax benefit. You don't really share in anybody else's capital gains or otherwise. You own your own cost basis, as they say. And generally, these are index funds, even though that's even changing a little bit to today. So are you in favor of ETFs and index funds as a alternative to mutual funds?
You know, ETFs are a partial solution. I think the complete solution are the separately managed accounts. And if I can talk about those in a moment, that would be great.
Mm-hmm.
But the ETFs, it's only a partial solution. I mean, they avoid some of the problems and costs of mutual funds, but these ETFs also experience some tax inefficiency. For example, if an ETF decides to realize capital gains, the capital gains is based on the ETF's cost basis, not the investor's. Other problems with ETFs, you know, because it's a bundled product, just like with a mutual fund, you can't do individual tax loss harvesting with ETFs. And ETFs, because they are designed to be mimicking a benchmark, they're not going to beat benchmarks. And I guess the final problem with ETFs is that because they are bundled products, and with that bundling, it means that you can't exclude certain stocks. And so, for example, let's say, you know, you have sort of a moral objection to firearms or tobacco, and you don't want to own those kinds of companies, you can't ask an ETF to exclude those firms. And so ETF, it's a solution, but only a partial solution.
My guest is Dr. Kenneth Kim. His book is Mutual Funds Exposed, What You Don't Know May Be Hazardous to Your Wealth. You just mentioned separately managed accounts. In light of full disclosure, Dr. Kim is the chief financial strategist at Equus, an investment company that offers investment management, which directly competes with mutual funds. So tell us why you think these separately managed accounts are superior.
So these separately managed accounts, or as they're otherwise known as SMAs, they are professionally managed portfolios, just like mutual funds are. But the advantage of SMAs is that when investors buy a separately managed account, they are directly buying the securities in that portfolio. They are not being a commingled investor, which means that you can have a professionally managed account and directly own those securities. And if you want to be someone who just simply invests and rests, then you don't have to worry about the activities of any other investor because there is no other investor in the securities in which you own. And in the past, this has been a way where the extremely wealthy have invested. This has been the way that university endowments have invested. This is the way that institutional investors have invested. They've invested in these ways because they wanted to bypass all the problems with mutual funds, all the costs with mutual funds. But in the 21st century, you know, anybody can invest in a separately managed account with the technology that's available. With an account for as little as $25,000 at my firm, an account as little as $25,000, you can be invested in a separately managed account. This used to not be the case, let's say 10 years ago, 15 years ago. An account minimum would be like $1 million sometimes, or sometimes even more than $1 million. But with technology that's available today, anyone can be in a separately managed account with just $25,000.
So the question is, and we are out of time, so I'm just going to leave this question hanging in the air for people to do their own due diligence, is do those accounts beat their benchmarks? Unfortunately, we don't have time to get your answer to that, but it is an interesting thought. My guest, of course, is Dr. Kenneth Kim. The author is Mutual Funds Exposed, What You Don't Know May Be Hazardous to Your Wealth. Thank you, Dr. Kim.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're listening to On the Money with certified financial planner Steve Pomerantz. If you'd like information about guests, topics, or anything you hear on this program, call 866-MONEY01 or visit the show's website at onthemoneyradio.org.